Thank you for that prayer, brother. We're in a series on the topic of doubt. How do we handle doubt in our lives? Do we refuse to admit that we have doubt? Do we refuse to discuss it? Or do we get busy with something else and not even think about it? Do we beat and threaten our faith and try to force ourselves to accept some things that we're not confident of? And let me tell you that when we do that, and sometimes we may do that, that produces hardened, dishonest, legalistic, unsympathetic Christians. We may not really understand why, but it does. You know, you know, one of the ways that you can always be right, don't you? If you want to go through your whole life and be right all the time, you know how to do it? Don't ever look at the other side. Really? I know some folks that way, don't you? I mean, they've got it figured out. It's the way it is. They don't want to be confused with any other facts that you might have, and so they refuse to entertain any other idea. Or will we understand that doubt is necessary to our development of faith? That it is, in fact, a safeguard against error? Now, you got to think about this some. But it is, in fact. Sometimes we may find out that that error that it is a safeguard against may be some error that I hold. And that doubt causes me to question things and to look deeper and face it honestly. Doubt challenges us to find out for ourselves. Remember, doubt is not the same thing as unbelief. It is to be hung between belief and unbelief. Thus, it is to be, in its very definition, of two minds. And that's what the word means. But doubts are real. And they have to be faced. Some of you talked to me about it a little bit, about your particular struggle with doubt. We all have and have had doubts in our lives, and we've struggled with those, and that's a good thing. And we need to not be ashamed of that. We need to not be afraid of it. They have to be faced. Bertrand Russell, some of you may have read some behind him, or at least have heard the name. A 20th century atheist reflected on the reasons why he chose to become an atheist. And he said, and I quote, "I became exceedingly religious and consequently anxious to know whether there was any good ground for supposing religion to be true. For the next 4 years," he said, "a great part of my time was spent in secret meditation upon this subject. I could not speak to anybody about it, for fear of giving pain. I suffered acutely," he said, "both from the gradual loss of faith and from the necessity of silence." Some of us have faced some of those similar things, that we feel like we can't talk about our doubts because we'll give someone else pain. Children who have doubts quite often cannot talk to their parents because they're afraid of the reaction that their parents might have. They're afraid of what their parents or their friends might feel about them if they express those doubts. Interestingly, he was speaking in his own life of the ages, between the ages of 14 and 18 years of age. And so by the time that he had become 18 years old, he had made up his mind that he didn't believe that there was a God. And I would suggest to you that there are two things that created this unbelief in his life. One of them is an acceptance of some wrong proofs as evidence of God's existence, or some invalid arguments. That is a source of pain. How many of you are familiar with the Jewel Miller film strips? Back years and years ago, we used some of the first set. They've been refined considerably since that time, but the very first ones that he came out with. And there was an argument in there about, it was an argument demonstrating that the flood was, in fact, a historical event. And it quoted I can still see the slide. It was a slide that had a picture of, and I forgot how many inches or feet deep it was, but this so many feet deep layer of clean, water-laid clay. Any of you remember that? That was one of the evidences that it had, excavators had dug in a number of different places, and they had found this same amount of clean, water-laid clay. Now, on the surface, that sounds like that's really a good argument for the flood. There's only one problem. It's just, if it is a worldwide flood, you should be able to find that all over the world, wherever you would dig, right? And so that which proves too much becomes an invalid argument. And whenever we grow up hearing arguments like that and somebody comes along, we find ourselves going to a university somewhere and some professor questions that, and all of a sudden it dawns on us that his reasoning sounds pretty reasonable to us, then all of a sudden we begin to question our faith. But the real problem is that what we have done is we have faced an argument and found that it was invalid. And so it never was a proof in the first place. And so it's not that we found out that a fact was untrue, and that means that God doesn't exist. It means that we found out that we were using an argument that wasn't valid to start with. And so some of Bertrand Russell's decision at that point came from evidence that he realized that there were some invalid arguments that Christians were using to prove things. And that means we need to be really careful, folks. We need to really be honest about things and not just throw something, all the stuff on the fire to see what'll burn. We need to really have some integrity about us when we make an argument. And then a second thing that contributed to this unbelief was an unhealthy attitude toward the handling of questions and doubts. You notice that he said, I could not speak to anybody about it for fear of giving pain. Isn't it a shame that he didn't have someone that he could go to, that he could talk to, sit down and talk to about those doubts? Because Bertrand Russell has had an incredible effect on our society since his writings and teachings and so forth. So let's examine some reasons, common reasons for doubt. And we're going to do this over the next few weeks, and I'm going to say to you that I think that there are some reasons for doubt that are maybe more palatable to us than others. There are some that will make more sense to us than others do. But each one of these, I believe, are sources of doubt, where doubt comes from in different people's life. No one of us will have all of these. All of us will likely have some of these that we have experienced in the past. And so the first one that I would suggest to you, that some have doubt that springs from ingratitude. And this will take a little bit of lend me your mind type thing, and let's reason together. Becoming clearly aware of our dilemma in life without God is the first step in developing faith. Are we all on the same page here? If we don't know how sorry our lot in life is without God, then there's going to be some things that develop in our life. And one of the things will be, from a negative standpoint, we won't develop any faith, not any real deep faith, because that's the very foundation. It's the only possible starting point, because when we realize how desperate our plight is without God, that forces us to look outside ourselves for a solution. And if we never understand that, and if we never come to understand how desperate our lot is without God, then we will keep trying to find solutions within ourselves. And that's the case in many instances in the world today. And I would say, not to insult anybody or anything, but this is common in the education field, and I think you'll understand this more as we develop this. Until you reach that point of understanding, then you'll never accept the gospel as truly the good news that it is. Because, for one thing, you won't feel a real need for it. You'll keep digging for yourself. You'll keep thinking that you're going to come up with the solutions yourself. And that's what the gospel is. It is extremely good news for people who are in an extremely bad situation. This does not say, I have to add these little asides along the way. This does not say that a Christian believes in God because of his needs. You understand that that's what an atheist would say about you as a Christian, that you believe because you need to believe. It does. I maintain that it does not say that, but rather what it says is that we come to disbelieve that the world has any ability to answer our real needs. That's what I believe really happens. When we see our plight as we truly are without God, then we're forced to turn outside ourselves because we realize that this world doesn't have the answers. You remember what Peter said in John chapter 6 after Jesus had had his discourse on the bread of life and people started going away and they all turned and left, and Jesus turned to his disciples and said, "Will you also go?" Remember what Peter said? "Where can we go? You have the words of life. You alone, literally, have the words of life." We have to turn outside ourselves. I might like to go away. I don't, if I were there when Jesus was talking about eating my flesh and so forth, I wouldn't have liked that, I don't think. I think I would have been like those people who walked away. I think that would have been really, really hard for me to take. And maybe it was for the disciples. But if it was, then Peter spoke for them when he said, and I'll paraphrase it, "We may not like what you're saying or may not understand what you're saying right now, but we know this. There's nowhere else we can go to get the answers to life. You alone have life's answers." And so when we understand, and only when we understand our plight, then we're not going to let a little bit of difficulty or peer pressure to force us away from belief in God. We're going to make somebody take it away from us. If they're going to get it, they're going to have to take it away from me, honestly, aren't they? I'm not going to give it up easily. The prodigal son becomes a pattern for all of us. He tried the world's solutions, and he ended up hungry. And that's not a bad parallel, folks. You can try what the world has to offer, and you will end up hungry in your soul. Because the world doesn't have the real solutions for life. And then when he realized that he had run out of resources, he had tried what the world has to offer, and here he was left hungry, then he remembered, and he started out for home. A man is destined to become nothing if we cannot remember what we are without God and be grateful for it. In 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 10, "By God's grace, I am what I am." And when we recognize that, and only when we recognize that, will we have a real basis. It's not to say that there won't be doubts from other areas, but there won't be doubts that come from ingratitude. And so whatever we become, wherever we go, whatever we do, we must never become unaware of what we are without God. And you say, okay, I'm with you at this point. Where in the world does doubt fit into this? Let me see if I can show you. As we fail to remember our previous situation, then a slow, subtle change happens in our life. First of all, an attitude of resourcefulness emerges. And that's not a bad thing. That grows into a mood of self-sufficiency. Now we're bordering on being dangerous. And that brings us into independence. And you know, of all the things that we in America have been taught that we want and we need to be, that is independent. We want to be independent. We don't want to have to trust in somebody else. We don't want to turn to somebody else for the solutions to the problems that we have in our life. And then that, along the way, somewhere along the way, then prayer ceases to be meaningful. and it just kind of slips aside. It becomes a ritual and is soon left behind. And what God has done fades away, and we focus on what it appears that we're able to do now as we become more resourceful and more self-sufficient and more independent. And at this point in our life, when we reach that point, then it doesn't take very much to cause something to happen inside of us. It doesn't take some cataclysmic event or some profound crisis in our life to cause this to happen, but doubt now enters. And it's almost doubt by convenience. And I hope that you'll be able to follow with me. It comes when maybe there's some price. It doesn't have to be very big, even a small price that we have to pay for faith, or some little inconvenience, or some obligation that we don't want associated with Christianity, or maybe some embarrassment involved in being a Christian, and suddenly little doubts begin to appear. And they say, like, perhaps I've taken this thing a little more seriously than I should have taken it. Perhaps I've gotten a little bit too intense about this God thing, about this religious. Maybe after all so-and-so, and or maybe we say, surely God can't expect me to do so-and-so. And you see, there's this subtle shift in our thinking. We become disgruntled at the thought of having to turn to God for the solutions to our affairs in life. And the key, again, it started in ingratitude and a moral, spiritual, and emotional insensitivity develops. And we forget the reality of what we once were and would be again without God, because we feel sufficient. We feel independent. You see, I cannot be self-sufficient and rely on God. One of those two has to go. And we've been taught